The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Happy weekend. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Annis alongside Donovan Bennett and Gare Joyce this week. Lots to get to as we'll have a look around the NHL as the Stanley Cup playoffs within our grasp. They're so close. And Duncan Keith going to miss at least the, well, he's going to miss the first game of the postseason for the Chicago Blackhawks. Suspended for six games, five of them during the regular season. We'll get to that. Raptors with a win over Memphis, and maybe Demare Carroll returning before the end of the season. We'll also talk about the Final Four going this weekend. But, gents, we start with, I think, the sports topic of mind on most people's minds around the city this weekend. The defending American League East champion Toronto Blue Jays open up their season on Sunday afternoon in Tampa against the Rays. Still have one more exhibition game to go. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 1 o'clock in Montreal against the Boston Red Sox. But they play for keeps on Sunday, 4 o'clock. Marcus Stroman on the hill. I tweeted out on Friday that it looked like they finally got through a spring training without a catastrophic injury. I suppose something crazy could happen this afternoon. I didn't think any of the regulars would be in the lineup. There are a couple. But overall, like, all you were hoping for, I think, as a Blue Jays fan, was for them to get through spring training without, like, Michael Saunders stepping on a sprinkler head or Marcus Stroman messing up his knee in a bunt drill. They did that, at least, Donovan.
Yeah, it's so funny. It wasn't that long ago, but when you look at what this team looked like a year ago with Saunders hurt, not really knowing when he'd come back, and obviously we know how that ended up. Stroman looking like he may be done for the year, and we also know how that ended up. But even just the roster construction, Dalton Pompey was your everyday center fielder, we thought. Kevin Pillar was your fourth outfielder, kind of lucky to make the team.
Yep.
You know, Daniel Norris was in the rotation, and Estrada was a relief guy. So we're armed with so much information, and the benefit is so much more health going into the year this year that I think there is a real reason for not just cautious optimism, but optimism in general.
I mean, there is a red flag.
All right, yeah, brain on this parade. Go ahead, Gary. Let's hear it.
No, just with you talk about health. I mean, Estrada's back.
Yes, 100%.
You know,
especially coming off a season where he pitched more innings than he ever had.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I mean, 180 innings last year. I think 150 was his max before that. Mm-hmm. I look for a few guys to roll back. I would put Estrada sort of at the top of that list. I'm optimistic about the team, but in terms of I thought they really, I don't know that they really overplayed their hand, committing to Estrada the way they did, but I just hope they don't think he's going to have the same season this year as he did last.
Well, that's an interesting place to start, the rotation. And listening to the broadcast on Sportsnet and Mark Shapiro joining Buck and Tabby talking about getting Jay Happ as early in the offseason as they did because they understood it was going to be kind of a crazy market for starting pitching. And we saw the dollars thrown around for David Price and Zach Greinke. So it turned out that, you know, 3 years, $36 million for Jay Happ was not unreasonable by the end of the offseason. The Blue Jays going into this offseason, rebuilding that rotation was a big question mark. And you're right, Gare, when you talk about maybe a regression happening with Marco Estrada, I think. I think maybe the Blue Jays understand that as well. But it seems like we went from a place, and things can happen real quickly. It seems like, at least to me, that the Blue Jays went into the offseason with real big question marks in their starting rotation. And not that they're totally set with like five aces, but it seems like there's a little bit of depth there when somebody goes down, because it seems like Gavin Floyd might be a thing. They got Jesse Chavez there. They got Drew Hutchison stretching it out in AAA. It seems like there's at least a couple of backup plans, like maybe there weren't in 2013.
Yeah, you'd think that the safest bet is that whoever is in the rotation now, it won't look exactly that way in September.
Yeah.
But there will be change there. I mean, Drew Hutchison could be there for all that we know.
Oh, yeah. I think he'll – I'd be shocked if he doesn't make a start this season.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, you wouldn't bet against him just if you're taking a look at broad strokes, big picture, across a career arc. You know, you look last year. I mean, Burley was the rock of the rotation. By October, he's a spectator. You know, something like that. Again, the one that I think is going to be the ultimate fall to earth this year is RA.
Yeah. Well, and he's the one guy that they can't afford to have a real big slip up. Like, he's the only guy that's ever thrown 200 innings before in this five-man rotation. And as much as people view Marcus Stroman as this guy who you can pencil in every fifth day and he'll give you quality innings and, you know, is ready to take that leap to acehood in Major League Baseball, which may be the case, but he's never done it before. And sure, he looked great in September, and sure, he looked good in the postseason, and sure, he started a winner-take-all game, five game in the American League Division Series. He's never stayed healthy, never been in the major leagues for a full season. Are there still, like, if you're going to poke holes at the Blue Jays, if you're going to do Gare Joyce and look at the red flags, it is in the rotation, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think less so now that Sanchez is in the rotation, but sure, but he is a question mark with his durability as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
So sure, there's questions, but I think it's all relative. And if we're talking about the division, take Tampa out of this conversation because their pitching is scary. But do the Red Sox in their rotation, does that scare you? Does the Yankees rotation that scare you from a top line aspect? Also from a getting through a 162 games in 180 days standpoint. I mean, the Red Sox obviously 1-2 in the rotation looks pretty good, but it falls pretty quickly after that. Yankees and the Red Sox also have the benefit of deep bullpens, which will make it, you know, a 5-6 inning game for them. But I think the Blue Jays rotation does not blow you away by any means. But what I think is different in the way they're built is, unlike other teams where you're looking when they come into town for three games, okay, well, which side of the rotation do we have? Do we have the front end? Do we have the back end? Well, the Jays, I don't think it matters as much.
Yeah.
I think, but if Happ is on the mound or if Stroman's on the mound, it may be a similar outing for the most part. And the difference will be whether or not offensively you score three runs or nine.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll probably give up somewhere in between. So I think if I'm a Jays fan, that's what I'm optimistic about. And as you mentioned, whether it's a Gavin Floyd or a Jesse Chavez or a Drew Hutchinson, if a couple of those guys go down, you have number 6, 7, 8 already figured out. You can plug them in and play right away. And the drop-off, although it'll be slight, it won't be monstrous the way it will be in other organizations in the division.
Yeah, there's no Ramon Ortiz or Chenming Wong about to step onto the hill for the Blue Jays like they did in 2013. What about the offense? Like, I mean, it almost goes without saying in everybody's predictions and preview of the American League East and the Blue Jays' chances in 2016 that they're going to score a trillion runs. They scored a trillion and a half runs last year. Outscored the second team in baseball, which was the Yankees somehow. Scored the second most runs in baseball last year.
They were the 27 Yankees.
They essentially were. Like, the drop-off between 1 and 2 was similar to, 27. I think it was, the biggest.
I was around for that.
Yeah, how was that? I mean, how did they compare to Ruth and Gehrig?
Oh, better quotes.
So, I don't know, Gare, are you going to find fault in the offense here? You can't, right? Like, it's difficult. I guess maybe the one thing would be durability with Troy Tulowitzki?
I'm not going to try and find fault with the offense.
Good.
Yes.
Thank you.
The numbers... I mean, it's hard to see them doing that again, but they, you know, okay, so if they only score 850 runs, you know, as opposed to 891 or whatever it was, inching towards 900. They will have that, no doubt. And even an injury or two they can sustain, and it won't really knock them backwards. I mean, if you said, okay, Donaldson will be on the sidelines for a long, you know, 30 days, you know, 2 weeks, 30 days. They can survive that, right? They've got enough other, you know, enough pieces elsewhere that they can take that, and it'll be a hiccup, but it won't be a complete disaster. You know, the one guy no one talks about, and I feel so bad for him, is Travis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit like William Hurt in The Big Chill, right? He had a big part, and then eventually, you know, it's all on the cutting room floor, and the only scene he's in, he's a corpse on a mortician's table, right? Like, I really liked what I had seen of him.
Rookie of the Month in April last year.
Oh, you would have projected him as being like top three in Rookie of the Year voting.
Yeah.
Like based on first month.
Yeah, and it's scary to project that over 162 games, because the power he showed in April, I think he had 7 home runs, which was tied with Josh Donaldson for the most home runs by a Blue Jay in April. He'd never shown that kind of power in the minor leagues. As far as the approach, though, yeah, that seemed like it was legit. And we did see him at least taking grounders at the end of spring training. But yeah, maybe he arrives in May, and maybe he supplants Ryan Goins. I guess, like, if you were projecting, like, who's going to be the least productive offensive player on this Blue Jays team, it would probably be Ryan Goins. Is anybody buying, though, in the increased offense he showed at the end of last year? He's been a pretty good offensive player in spring training, but I have a difficult time taking anything away from that. Is there anybody buying into the possibility that maybe when David Travis is ready to return, there might not be a spot for him on this team if Ryan Goins does what he did in August last year?
I find that hard to believe, just because I think Travis projects as a better player when we're talking 2, 3, 4 years down the line. I don't know why, you know, if and it's a super small sample, but why, you know, is it unforeseen in 3 years from now, 4 years from now, we're talking about him as, you know, a top 5 second baseman in the American League? I don't know how far he was from that at the level he was playing when he was healthy. The interesting thing, and you mentioned it, with Travis, as he was forgotten, and he was a big part of that offense when he was healthy, is what that drop-off is with Goins. And I don't expect him to be hitting walk-off home runs like he did at times last year. But another guy who, for me, is not really talked about in his absence is Deonor Navarro.
And yeah.
Not so much even about him. You know, I felt he was a great bat coming off of the bench, and, you know, gave you some flexibility if you wanted to make some substitutions in late games. But also, now the fact that your backup catcher is Josh
Tolan. He swings a wet newspaper.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know he's the caddy for Arrieta, and, you know, since you're trying to get the best out of a 41-year-old pitcher as you can, that does make some sense. But it hurts to have him in your lineup offensively, you know, once every 5 days.
Yeah,
and if Russell Martin, who seems to always be carrying an injury, if he goes down for 20 or 30 games, I think that's a much bigger conversation than if Donaldson did, and he's the reigning MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I think losing Martin would hurt your offense. I'd be more worried about it hurting my defense. Mm. You know, just what he brings to the table behind the plate, or what he brings to the behind the plate. He's of great value there. And with Navarro, you were fairly confident that, you know what, it's not Russell Martin, but it's probably at least replacement level or better.
Yeah.
And the rapport he had with Marco Estrada seemed real, real good. And if you talk to Estrada, at least the quotes he's given this spring was that, you know what, he caught me later in the season. I had figured things out. I was just a different pitcher when I was throwing mostly to Russell Martin early in the season. But I don't know, is there the possibility of something there? I mean, we've seen it throughout the history of baseball. Some pitchers prefer different catchers for whatever reason. Maybe there's an issue or there's a time frame where it takes a little bit of time for those two to get in sync early this season, especially when you're talking about a guy starting the season on the DL in Estrada.
Yeah, and there's a comfort level of trusting a guy and being able to say, He put down that finger. I'm gonna go with it. Right. I don't not only trust him to catch me. I can throw this, you know, breaking pitch without fear, knowing that he's gonna catch it or block it. But also I trust that he understands my best pitches, my rhythm, my cadence, what I can throw when. And he understands how that will play against whoever's in the box that I'm facing.
Plus, it's just, you know, you remember the good times you had with this guy.
Sure.
You know, you step on, oh, you, like you're, something flips in your brain. Oh, yeah, I remember like the two-hitter I threw in Tampa with Deonner Navarro behind
right.
the plate.
Yeah.
I think Estrada can get over it. Maybe he'll get a little misty the first time that he he stands on the mound and looks in at Martin this year. And, you know, what you're saying about developing rapport, I mean, it's Russell Martin.
Yeah,
you know, like,
right.
It's not
J.P. Arencibia.
No. So, I mean, Martin will figure it out. Estrada will figure it out. They're both veterans. You know, they've been around the block. I might be more worried about, you know, if Martin went out and Estrada was pitching to Josh Tolley, right?
Mm,
like,
yes.
that's another thing entirely.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Garrett Joyce, Donovan Bennett. I'm Ben Ennis. So here's the, and baseball is one of those sports where you wonder how much, like, things that you can't quantify with numbers, how much of an impact they really do have. Some people believe a lot. Some people believe it's just a game that you could play with dice on a board, and it doesn't really have an impact. This is a different feeling going into a Blue Jays season than we've had in 23 years now. They're a playoff team. They were a playoff team. They were a defending division champ. Nobody's going to take the Blue Jays lightly this year. Not to say that they did last year, but they were 50-51, even with that great offense. And I know adding Troy Tulowitzki did help a whole lot, and not just on the offensive side of things. But this is now, if not the favorite to win the division, maybe co-favorites with the Red Sox, maybe a team that is at least in the mix once again to win the division. Does that change anything, either with the fans? Like, I can't tell you how many times over the last decade or so the Blue Jays got off to a slow start and fans are ready to jump off the bandwagon. Like, is that still going to be the case this year, even though they've kind of built some collateral with what they did last season and teams coming in? Yankees, with the way the Blue Jays put a hurting on them last couple of months of last season, is there going to be a different respect factor, or does that even matter?
I don't think the respect factor plays into it, you know, and I'm not one who says that it's all by whip and.
But there's you would admit that, like, there's, for whatever reason, the Blue Jays have had, like, their issues going into Yankee Stadium and you know, the Blue Jays fans, at least, maybe it doesn't translate necessarily on the field, although it had in wins and losses, and maybe that had more to do with the actual players.
Yeah.
But there was a different feeling than maybe there will be this year for Blue Jays fans, at least.
The Jays built up a lot of good faith, mm-hmm. you know, with fans. Like, I imagine that if we do get to the point where they are 50-51 again, that maybe a lot of that will have eroded away. And, last year's run will be an archival tape as far as fans go. But, you know, it wasn't just the run, the season as a whole or getting to the playoffs. It was the way that they did it.
Yeah.
You know, like it.
Eight games back of the Yankees with like a month and a half.
Yeah. And just, I mean, it was a mini series, you know, like
yeah.
a TV mini series. It was the most compelling entertainment that was out there. You know, so I think that as far as fans go, it's going to pick up right where it left off that way, even if there is some significant turnover on the roster in losing Price and losing Navarro. And, you know,
offense almost is as is, though.
Yes. And that's what made it so entertaining. When you're talking about Tulowitzki earlier saying, you know, a huge ad for the offense. To me, I thought the big ad was the defense.
100%.
And that is, you know, it's easy to rack up, it's easy to say that the Jays were an offensively driven team. But their middle defense is the best in the American League and maybe the best in baseball. If you go, you know, catcher, short, second, and center, right? Like, I don't know who you would put there ahead of them. Is when Tulowitzki came in, that dynamic changed completely. And, you know, that isn't as easily measured as 891 runs, you know, and it's not as sexy, but it is crucial to what this team can do going forward.
But even if you look at their defense as a whole, I mean, at third base, aside from Machado, is there a better and Longoria? So I guess two guys in the division. but is there a better defensive third baseman in the American League than Josh Donaldson? Maybe not. Russell Martin is always in the conversation for a Gold Glove. And then, you know, you have a split at first, but when that split happens to be Justin Smoke, you're looking at a plus defender there as well. So it's funny.
The other guy's an adventure.
Right. Yes. Yes. Although he did get better towards the second half. And I think the way his bat plays, we'll have him in the lineup more often than not. But it's so funny how you remove one piece in Reyes and plug in Tulowitzki, and that just solidifies everything else around it. And it now goes from a defense that you don't really trust to a defense that looked superb and made a lot of tough plays look very routine to end the year.
Yeah, Reyes struggled so much.
He cost
them
directly like three games there, and the errors are only part of it. But like with his errors, he cost them at least like I think the 27th out like twice in a week. He threw the ball away.
The one in Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
I
feel like there was one against the Mets as well.
Yeah. They were just crushers. Right? Like just ripping the heart right out of their chest.
I feel like you do yourself a disservice, though, if you only talk about the errors, because it's the range to me that changed. There were, I remember the first couple of weeks of Troy Tulowitzki, I was keeping a mental tally of how many plays were made by Troy Tulowitzki that would not have been made by Jose Reyes. And it was like 3 to 4 a game, which is you're talking about 30 to 31 outs you're giving a team as opposed to 27. Like, it's massive. You're getting like an extra inning out of your pitching staff because of the defense they played up the middle without Jose Reyes. And yeah, it is because this team is fun to talk about. The offense they played, the defense is so much a part of what they were able to do in the second half.
Well, and remember, you know, that second half, Travis is hurt. So now you have Goins at second as well. So range on both sides of the bag. And it's funny how that helps your pitching staff be that much better. But to get to your original question about you know, the feeling around the team. For me, I feel that the serendipitous way the year kind of ended and how fun the team was to watch has built some equity for the franchise, specifically at this time when you're going to have zero Canadian teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The TFC is on the road forever. They're not going to be back in town for over a month.
Maybe the Raptors are doing good things.
CFL doesn't start for a while. So, yeah, you're sharing that mantle with the Raptors. But baseball, with its rhythm, you're playing every day where the Raptors are playing kind of one in every three. So they have kind of center stage at this point, assuming they start pretty good or hot. I think any of the scrutiny or even pessimism, it's not even placed on the players at this point because of the dynamics. I think it's placed on the front office. So anything that happens to go wrong, it's, well, you should have just honored the deadline, given Eddie a new deal, or given, you know, Jose a new deal. He's right. Hometown discounts don't exist. Or David Price, he started 5-1 in his first six. He should be in Toronto. He should have paid up. So I think any of the conversation is solely at the new guys in the equation, in Atkins and Shapiro, not so much the team in a weird way.
Oh, absolutely. Right. You know, like to a great extent, Shapiro and Atkins are now living in a world that they didn't create. You know, it's a situation that they could influence, but ultimately it's not their creation as it stands right now. And they could take a lot of blame. And I don't know that they were in much of a position to do anything differently.
And I don't know how much credit they'll get if things go well. Like,
none. They'll get none.
They're in, not to say I feel bad for them, but because they inherit an organization with resources and a team that was pretty good to start. So there are tougher, entry-level positions in baseball. But having said that, anything that goes positive, well, Alex built this team. Mm-hmm. You're riding his coattails. Anything that goes negative, see, you couldn't keep it together.
Alex is the only one that's a guaranteed winner.
Yeah.
Right? If the team fails, it's Atkins and Shapiro's. If it wins, it's
Alex it's put it Alex's. Together.
Yeah. I mean, he's in the catbird seat.
Well, and is that fair as far as Shapiro and Atkins? Because I just mentioned how there was a lot of work to do in the starting rotation. There was a question with Marco Estrada. Jay Happ was signed as a free agent. They brought in Gavin Floyd on a major league deal when it seemed like not many teams were apt to do that. We don't know what Gavin Floyd is, frankly, but he's getting $1 million. Looked pretty good in spring. Was throwing 95. Have they done a good enough job? The offense is the offense. And that was pretty much, they didn't have to touch that all that much. But did they do a good job this offseason?
Well, they did a good job in giving themselves options, right? Yeah. And giving themselves decisions to make, whether they made the right ones, we'll see. But I think their first, aside from the contracts, I think their first real decision was what to do with Aaron Sanchez. Because that affects, obviously, this year, but in a real way, it affects this ball club moving forward. Specifically, if we're looking at R.A. Dickey not being a member of this rotation for the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. that's another spot you're going to have to fill. But in a real way, you have an opportunity to win right now. Another year with Encarnacion or Batista or even health is not promised. And you can make a solid argument for the 25-man roster being the strongest right now with Sanchez throwing fire at the back end of games coming out of the bullpen, which he'll probably do at some point this year because we don't know what his workload limit is. But I think so far, I mean, they've yet to play a game, but so far you can't really find issue with any decision they've made, be it free agency or roster.
But the other thing is, and if you're just talking fans' perceptions, right, fans will think it's nothing that Alex wouldn't have done.
Right. And in actuality, we now are looking at Alex through a different lens and like, oh, Alex would have re-signed David Price, even though that was not his nature.
Yep.
Up until, you could argue, the trade deadline.
Right.
Alex in the abstract can't fail.
Right.
He has an opportunity to win three ways this year, right? You know, if the Dodgers win, you know, it's like his magic, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Even though they have a $200 million payroll.
Yeah.
Right.
That he inherited.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So it's nice to be Alex Anthopoulos.
Yeah.
Glad we figured that out. Before we take the break, a couple of roster decisions, and you touched on one, Donovan, we should get to before the break. Aaron Sanchez in the rotation and not in the bullpen. And you're right. In my mind, it's always been that's where he belongs, in the rotation, given a shot at least. He's done everything he's needed to earn a chance to do that. Now, whether he remains there all season, different story. That it affects this team going forward, that they did have an option with Gavin Floyd, the way he looked in spring, that it might have been found money, that you might have really just been able to add to your bullpen. It would have been a crushing back end of the bullpen. Did change minds a little bit, but eventually the Blue Jays going with, hey, you know what? If we can get 170 innings out of our young stud, that's a lot better than 70 or 80.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the difference between Sanchez and Floyd as a starter, you know, is a different conversation than the difference between them in the bullpen. I think Sanchez is probably set up to be a much better reliever than Gavin Floyd. I think the difference between them as a starter in Sanchez at this incarnation, it's probably mitigating. Sanchez probably has the two best pitches, mm-hmm. but pitch 3, 4, and 5 are Gavin Floyd's.
Yep.
He has more command of his tools at this point and as he should. But I do like the decision because for me, just rip the Band-Aid off at this point. You are better moving forward with him as a starter. Look at the Mets. Everyone would wish they had what the Mets had. So give him his opportunity, one he's earned. From a culture standpoint, you've said, you know what, you've done the work. We want to reward people who've put in the time, so go ahead. We're going to give you a leash as a starter to start. But, you know, specifically, you're best moving forward if Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez are in some form or fashion 1-2 in your rotation. So let's find out what that looks like now rather than figuring it out a year from now. And then a year after that, doing the same thing with probably Roberto Osuna.
Yeah. I think that that's what the first month of the season's for,
yeah.
Right? Is figuring out exactly what hand you have to play, right? And it's seemingly pretty low risk, you know, in trying this for however long. You know, they're not saying Aaron Sanchez is going to be a starter all season long. He's starting the season that way.
Right. Boy, that would be tough to lift him from it if he's the Aaron Sanchez they hope he is, like going into the playoffs at the end of the season. Like, could paint yourself into a world of hurt, but I mean that they haven't said a number of innings that he will pitch, and they haven't announced exactly what their plan is, probably because they don't have one. They don't know what's going to happen.
And I think they saw what happened with the Nationals and Steven Strasburg a couple years ago, where they had
real
pressure. And then
Matt Harvey last year.
Of course, yeah. Great point. So saying no number gives you flexibility to change whatever that number was internally.
Yeah. It's funny, down in spring training, Sanchez was talking about how this past offseason was the first time that he's ever worked out in the off season. Right? So, like, if he actually breaks down, then next year he can do nothing in the off season, right, like he'd done every off season before. Yeah. It's amazing to think that someone gets to where he is in the game without having worked out. Now if you see him walking around the ballpark, actually you can believe he never worked out.
Right.
Right. He was lean, but not particularly sinewy, let's say. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Well, if he walked around here, right, and you didn't know,
yeah,
you thought he works in IT, maybe,
yeah,
sales, marketing, like, but he
he's
touched,
got the boyish
we're gonna
face.
Hear yeah we're gonna hear it from IT now.
Wow.
You know, like,
yeah,
I gotta call them on Monday morning.
My computer's not gonna work when I get back to my desk, but he doesn't look assuming, but he touched 96 97 easily, you know, and now put on 20 pounds and is touching 98, 99, no problem.
There's so much we got to get to still, and we want to get our Major League Baseball previews and predictions in as well. But I want to also talk about the Blue Jays closing situation. You mentioned Roberto Osuna, so we'll get to that and plenty more coming up next. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Garrett Joyce and Donovan Bennett. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of At the Letters, our Blue Jays podcast. From two guys with more wild offerings than Juan Guzman, it's At the Letters. Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Pleased to be joined by one of the newest Toronto Blue Jays, Drew Storen. Drew, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Thanks for having me, guys.
I wanted to start with this. It's one of my favorite stories about you is how you set up in the Nationals bullpen. You designed this like set of stairs. You made these improvements. You put in this new phone, really putting that Stanford education to good use. Just tell us a bit about that, and if you've had a chance to look at the Rogers Center and maybe do up some blueprints, some mock-ups for how you'd like to improve the Rogers Center bullpen.
Spend enough time in that bullpen, you kind of get bored and figure out ways for a little home improvement. Toronto actually has elevated seating bullpen, but we didn't have it in D.C., so I kind of threw up a way to do it. And then this year on eBay, found a payphone cover, old one, and I bought that, put it in. A couple improvements to the bullpen, you know, spice things up down there. Like I said, we spent a lot of time down there, so you got to spruce it up a little bit.
Go to Sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on At the Letters and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand, absolutely free.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Donovan Bennett and Gare Joyce. We are verbose, so we're going to get to originally our division by division predictions. This segment, we'll probably have to save that until the top of the next hour, because there's a lot more I want to get to Blue Jays wise. And one thing in particular, and we kind of teased it before we took the break, as the Blue Jays open up their season on Sunday in Tampa, and we know who the closer will be. Teams do this. They announce their closer on opening day. Remember last year, the Blue Jays broke camp, and Brett Cecil was the closer for about a week and a half.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then Miguel Castro was the closer for about 2 weeks. And then Roberto Osuna was the closer, and he remained the closer for the rest of the season. He was outstanding and, once again, is the closer, even though Drew Storen was a guy that was picked up in the offseason in the Ben Revere trade from the Washington Nationals. There's a couple of
those Castro tops are on discount on opening day, by the way.
Well, apparently he's gonna make the opening day roster in Colorado with the Rockies, so that's good. In spring, I think he struck out 9 in 9 innings. He also gave up 3 home runs. So it's kind of hit and miss for Miguel Castro in the early days as a Rocky. So the Blue Jays go with the familiar. They go with the guy who got it done, the 20-year-old who's now 21, who took the ball in the 9th inning in the postseason. Looked almost unflappable, like there were a couple of moments, but bounced back nicely. He has all the physical tools you would want out of a back of the bullpen guy getting the 27th out. But they have this guy in Drew Storen who's done the job before for a longer period of time in Major League Baseball. He is a pending free agent. He's getting paid close to $10 million this season to be a reliever. Plus, there's the specter of 2017 looming. And what happens to Roberto Osuna? Because it seems like he has the arsenal to be in the rotation. And is that a transition easy to make if he spends another season at the back end of the bullpen throwing his 70 innings or so? So that's a lot to wrap our hands around. Anyone want to take a kick of the can at any of that stuff?
I was surprised, ultimately that they did go with Osuna as the closer. When they acquired Storen, I thought it was for the express purpose of having him close and having Osuna in a setup position would be a cautious way to handle a player who's still so young.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy what he was able to accomplish last year. But I guess, the flip side of it is if you tried to sell Osuna on the idea that you're going to be the setup man, or we're going to do something different with you, that in some ways he would look at that as you're judging me at some level of failure, your expectations are that I can't do it again. I thought Storen would end up there, and I think there's a shot that he may end up there again. All of these decisions, like the ones that we talked about in the first segment, those apply the opening week, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I think the surprising part for me was, and you mentioned it, Ben, last year he became the closer out of necessity, not out of design.
Yeah.
And so this
next
year,
guy up.
Yeah, exactly, right? Well, we got to try somebody else.
Yeah.
So you were the setup guy. Guess what? Now you're the closer. This year, you made a move and gave up not an insignificant piece. Like, I people can debate this, but I think Ben Revere was a big part of that run down the stretch.
Yeah, agreed.
So you made that move for Storen, who you won't have here necessarily for very long, saying, okay, he's going to be the guy to finish games for us. And you could massage it to Osuna and say, well, listen, this is the best role for you now because we can get you some multiple inning opportunities as the setup guy, build you up a little bit, and then we'll slowly transition you to see if you can eventually become a starter, or if not, a year later when Storen's not here, then you move into becoming a closer, an elite one at that, hopefully. So I thought they had a way to kind of massage it so both guys were kind of happy and felt fulfilled. And they made a decision that they didn't really have to make in making Osuna the closer. Having said that, how many pressure-packed situations, getting them to the playoffs and in the playoffs, did he come through? And the thing about Osuna that you love in closers is he rips the Band-Aid off, and it's gonna, someone's gonna die quickly. Like, let's get let's get right at it, right? Like, here's heat, hit it out or miss it and sit down. So that's the mentality that you want at the end of a game. So he does profile as a closer. It's just, you always hear in baseball, don't overpay for saves. And in the long run, I think he helps your organization, similar to Sanchez. If he's a starter, and the longer he is a closer, it makes that transition that much harder.
There was no option for him to be a starter this year, though. And I think the interesting thing, and comparing him to the Sanchez situation, that, yeah, there was definitely an argument to be made that this year, for 2016, the Blue Jays were better off with Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen and Gavin Floyd in the rotation if Gavin Floyd was able to make 30 starts and be something similar to the guy he was in spring training. I think this is the move. If you're trying to win a World Series in 2016, Roberto Osuna is probably the better option in the ninth inning, right? Like, it's kind of the opposite of what they've done with Aaron Sanchez, where maybe long-term it would be better if Roberto Osuna was the setup guy throwing multiple innings, but he's done the job so well, and I don't know, maybe there are question marks about Drew Storen. Certainly the Washington Nationals would tell you there are.
Well, and questions about him as a setup guy, because that's a role he did not succeed in a year ago when, you know, our friend Papelbon came into town. So
he started strangling MVPs.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
look out, Josh Donaldson.
Right. Right. I don't think that would be wise.
No.
But there is, I guess, you know, some sort of security in the idea that we'll go what got us to where we were last year. And you know what? I think that is one of Gibby's, you know, prevailing instincts is to you know, stick with the formula until it's proven wrong. You know, I mean, it might be a bit more adventurous to use Osuna in a different role, and maybe things casting forward will take shape sooner. But you know, as something to go to now to win right now, you know, it was an easy decision to make. But you would think that when they got Storen, it was to be a closer. That was my take on it from moment one. So we'll see. Again, it's through the start of the season, and things can go wonky and take an entirely different direction, exactly like it did last year.
Yeah.
Right. We were sitting here talking about Daniel Norris, right?
Right.
We were
talking about the six rookies that broke camp with this Blue Jays team a year ago. And not a lot of them survived through game 162. Going to continue our baseball talk past the top of the next hour. Do a little preview of all the divisions in baseball, our World Series predictions as well, which are worth a whole lot and really apply come October. We'll also get into Duncan Keith, his six-game suspension, in the Raptors with a big win in Memphis. Got the Spurs coming up. And maybe Damare Carroll returning for a game or two this regular season. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Donovan Bennett and Gare Joyce. This is Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Donovan Bennett and Gare Joyce. Opening day, Major League Baseball on Sunday. The Blue Jays in Tampa to play the Rays at 4 o'clock. It's a triple-header of games. Blue Jays apparently important enough this year that they get that Sunday start. Rest of the majors open up on Monday. So, gents, why not give our previews for all six divisions in Major League Baseball and our World Series predictions as well, just so that we're on the record, okay? And like, say, like, something crazy happens, like we're correct on some of these things, it'll be on tape and we can replay it in October. And if we're not, the records will be destroyed.
We're not going to share these with HR or anything like that.
I don't know. Maybe yours. all right, let's work our way towards the American League East. Let's start in the National League. The National League champs coming out of the National League East last year, but it was not the Washington Nationals, as would have been predicted a couple of years in a row now. And kind of crazy that that rotation was not able to break through in the last couple of years. But the New York Mets are now they're the team with a target on their backs, arriving much earlier than many anticipated. There's a couple of teams trying to lose in that division. Like more, almost half that division is trying to lose, as the Braves and Phillies.
I give them a good shot at that.
Yeah, they're going to be pretty solid at that. How do you guys see this division breaking down?
I like the Mets. I think they're just too much pitching, too good. And you profile those pitchers to get better than they were a year ago. I like them to win the division.
Just on the eyeball test, I don't see them rolling back as a group. Maybe one guy, maybe there'll be one of them will get nicked up or, you know, get sore. Could happen, but I don't see them rolling back, and I like them over the Nats.
I like the Nats this year. They need to, apparently, with their fragile psyche, go into a season under the radar and not as the favorites. They've got a guy who finally came into his own last year in Bryce Harper, and boy, did he in a big way, has established himself as one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball. And Steven Strasburg in a wonk year as well. Maybe he's going to pitch through a couple of things. Max Scherzer, a couple of no-hitters. He's pretty good. I like the top end of that bullpen. Let's check out the Central, where you had three playoff teams a year ago. And the team that won 100 games and lost rather early in the St. Louis Cardinals, Pirates and Cubs were there as well. And then here you go. Another National League division where two teams are trying to actively lose in the Brewers and Reds. I think this is once again going to be an interesting division. And maybe like there's a century of losing about to come to an end. Anybody buying on that?
I mean, call me, you know, a sucker, but it's a couple guarantees, right? Death, taxes, the Spurs, and I think the Cards. Maybe not so much in the postseason, but in the regular season for sure. I think there's so much buzz around the Cubs, and they're that fun, you know, story. And I think they'll be there. I think they'll be in the wild card hunt, but I like the Cards to win the division.
Not me. I mean, the Cubs, I always pull for a story. And, you know, all the magic, you know, the curse, the Billy Goat curse. But throw all that overboard and you just look at what they did personnel-wise, their ads, Zobrist and Lackey and Hayward. And, you know, Arrieta, was there anyone better?
No.
You know, like, they have too many horses as far as I'm concerned.
It'd be real, real weird to see a World Series parade, in Chicago for the Cubs. But, if you go according to many predictions, that'll happen this year, but, I'm kind of with you. I gotta see it to believe it, Donovan. And I like the Cards as well. There's too much history between those two teams, and, the Cards are very often the team that's on the positive side of things. Let's go out to the National League West. Boy, there's kind of a recurring theme in the National League. There's a lot of, like, where the American League, it's hard to find teams who will not be competitive this season. There's a whole bunch. And one, if not two, exist in the West as well, depending on what you think the Padres are. But the Rockies definitely in a rebuild mode. The Dodgers spend to the hilt. It has not resulted in much yet. And it is an even-numbered year. So that means maybe the G-men are about to step up.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to say Giants. When you look at all those postseason innings that, you know, Bumgarner has had, and you think he's probably going to break down, and you look at what the Diamondbacks have done, and they've added, you know, Greinke, which will give them a bump. But you did mention it. It's 2016, even number year. I'm going with the Giants.
Yeah, Madison Bumgarner is my second favorite Bumgarner. I mean, James Bumgarner, a.k.a. James Garner.
I like Rockford Felix Files. Baumgarner.
Yeah, but, you know, you would think just based on history, the idea that someone, you know, who's done what Bumgarner has done, that he'd break down. And you think that, until you look at him.
Yeah.
And you're like, that can't break down. Like, you know, he's Nolan Ryan-esque in sort of just the way he's put together. I don't see him breaking down. And I like the Giants. Johnny Cueto will be an interesting watch this year.
Yeah.
You know, that could go any direction. Look good in the postseason, and you know, one start and an awful another. You know, off season for sure for him. So we'll. But I have to like the Giants there.
Nolan Bumgartner is on line one. He's really upset. No. He didn't make your top Bumgartner list.
I'm gonna go crazy and go with the former Blue Jays team, Dave Stewart's Arizona Diamondbacks. Just because it's fun to, I don't know, diverge from the path that's well known. It'd be nice to see a team go out, blow their brains out in free agency like they did with Zach Greinke, and actually succeed. Unlike what the Padres did when they landed James Shields, who, yeah, they're once again in a rebuild mode. Let's go to the American League now. Let's start out west there, where the Rangers and Blue Jays met in the division series. Boy, the Astros. People forget about this, how they had the Royals on the ropes in the division series as well. I wonder if that becomes a playoff bugaboo for them. And here we go, like a generational player in Mike Trout. Ooh, you'd like to see some, you know, postseason appearances. Boy, it's tough. And again, there's maybe four teams. I don't know if anybody's counting on the A's to maybe surface in that division, but should at least be a four-team race, maybe, if you're buying on the Mariners.
Yeah, I think I like the Astros. I think they'll get a wild card, but I think they probably were a bit ahead of schedule last year. I think they revert back to the mean a little bit. I like Texas. When you look at their front end pitching with Darvish back, and you know you've got arguably 1-2, you know, the best in the division. And then when you look at their offense, it's not mentioned with the Jays, but their offense is varied in the way that they can manufacture runs and go deep on you. I like Texas. We forget that they were a crazy and terrible inning away from...
All it took was three errors in an inning.
Yeah, and routine errors at that from beating the Jays and kind of going toe-to-toe with the Royals. So, yeah, I like Texas.
If you're talking about a healthy Darvish in the second or third month of the season and Hamels... is your front end.
It's pretty scary.
It is. So Texas is really, really hard for me to pick against.
I'm going to go crazy here again because, again, like if I'm wrong, nobody's really going to call me out. But if I'm right, boy, do I look like a genius. Let's go with the Mariners.
Wow.
Mm, why not?
Wow.
I mean, they still got Felix Hernandez there. Robinson Cano, I know in the overall, had a horrible year last year, but he was hurt. Second half, he was a man possessed. And spring training apparently looks spectacular. That's a pretty good 3-4. Punch in the middle of that lineup with Nelson Cruz there as well. Hey, Adam Lind is a Mariner this year as well. So why not? Let's have Adam Lind in the playoffs. Let's check out the Central, which, okay, I think for sure if you're looking at a division where there's five teams who can compete, I think this is it. There's the defending World Series champs who, yes, lost some pieces in that rotation, lost a second baseman that was key for them in the postseason as well, but people forget that that rotation wasn't that great a year ago either.
Nope.
But they got it done and won a World Series. The Twins arrived on the scene last year, and they have some good young players. This is going to be a fun division to watch, I think.
It is, but I just don't foresee you going from World Series champ to losing your division. And you're right. And if they lost some pieces from that bullpen, I'd be a bit more concerned. But the starters were, for me, far and away the least impressive part of their team. I like the Royals to win the Central.
Yeah, the Royals... are, you know, they've been better than their numbers would indicate they should be the past couple of years. And so we're back there again. You know, they might project to 83 wins and they'll somehow get over 90. You know, like they're overachievers established that way. So I can't pick against them.
I'm almost tempted to take chalk here, but I'm not going to. And I want to take the Tigers, but I can't do that either, even though they did add a little bit of something to that rotation in Jordan Zimmermann, but he's been regressing the last couple of years. The White Sox, I thought, supremely underachieved last year, and they still have Chris Sale, who, despite the slight build and the mechanics looking like it shouldn't work. It does.
No one's more fun to watch.
Yeah, he is like, it makes no sense. You feel like his arms are going to break in seven different directions when he pitches. Let's see Brett Laurie and Adam Lind in the playoffs this year. Let's have the White Sox winning that Central for me. All right, so let's get to the glamour division in baseball. I assume it's still the glamour division, although there was a point last season where people talking about it maybe taking a step back. But the American League East is back, I think, in a big way. Blue Jays, Yankees, Red Sox headline the group. I think most people are picking the Orioles to finish dead last. The Rays are a wild card in whether you believe they can hit to the level that supports the pretty good starting pitching. Donovan, is this the Blue Jays winning back-to-back division titles or not?
Yeah, you know what? I think so. Boston scares me. And I think whoever finishes second in this division will probably get, you know, one of the wild card spots. But they scare me because they've got elite talent, but they also scare me because they have real questions. If I'm a Red Sox fan, questions about the rotation,
yeah. You
know, will Kelly be healthy? You know, Hanley moving to first, who's playing third and what their weight is. I think in a weird way, although we've spent over an hour talking about the Blue Jays questions, the Red Sox have just as many, if not more.
I'm going with Boston to win the East. And I don't think it will be decided until the last week of the season. And I think the Jays and the Rays will be in the conversation as well. I'm a fan of Betts and Bogaerts.
Yeah.
I think they're great young talents. I have Price. I think will do what Price does, right? He'll you know, as much as you like Hamels and Darvish as a 1-2, as a one. You know, you're not doing better than Price in the American League. And so, I'm going to go with them. I sort of see, the Jays, the Red Sox, and the Rays sort of being 88 to 92 wins. And, one injury can shape that, you know. So I it's sort of a blanket for me, but I'm going to take the Red Sox.
I think the Blue Jays and the Red Sox are well above everybody else. I think the Rays are going to have, they are going to have difficulty scoring. They did last year. I think it's even more so this year. And I think the Yankees kind of outperformed their offensive expectations a year ago. I like the Yankees rotation, honestly. If you could switch the Blue Jays and the Yankees rotation, I might do that if I was a Blue Jays fan. I kind of like it, at least to start the season on opening day and assuming Masahiro Tanaka's health. But, that Red Sox offense, it's not Blue Jays territory. They do things differently, though, and it's very young. I think Blue Jays are going to be a wild card team, but I'd take the Red Sox to win the division. All right, before we move on, let's just give our World Series predictions. Who's going to be in it for both leagues and who's going to win it, Donovan? Who do you have?
Well, although I said they were not going to win their division, I do think they're set up well, in a seven-game series situation. I think the Cubs are going to not only come out of the National League, I think they're going to make that wonderful story for Gear Joyce to go down to Wrigleyville and write. And I think it is going to be a story-filled World Series where we're talking about in the American League, the Toronto Blue Jays finally getting back there.
All right.
And ending that drought. And the Chicago Cubs, kind of like the curse of Bartman, finally going away.
I'm just trying to imagine what hotel prices would be.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah.
For if you're covering a World Series that's in Chicago.
Airbnb for Gare.
Absolutely. I'll be sleeping in the van. Does Joe Madden still have that mobile home, right? Like the Winnebago? Yeah. Yeah. I like the Cubs in the National League. I think the Jays can get there. I do. I would give them right now, as much as I don't like them to win the division, I think that they can slip through. But boy, I look at Arrieta and just think, if you're going to be able to throw him out three times in a short series, I can't pick against them. Right. And they've got a lot of pieces.
I hadn't made a decision until this very moment, and I don't know if I still have. I think the National League winners coming out of the East, whether it's the Nationals or the Mets, and because, you know, I'm a guy that likes to see things done differently, and I like to go against chalk, I'll take the Nats in the World Series against the Red Sox. I feel like the Red Sox are able to bury $100 million worth of fat Pablo Sandoval on the bench. They're probably able to add some more cash before the non-waiver trade deadline. It's just scary what they can do. I think the Blue Jays will push them, but I like the Red Sox winning it all against the Washington Nationals.
Tell the truth.
World
you
Series.
Probably took the Nationals last year. Tell
yeah,
the truth.
No, of course I did.
There
I
you
wasn't
go.
Taking the Mets.
You're gonna stick with a losing bet.
And the year before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Gare Joyce and Donovan Bennett. All right, let's switch gears. Let's take a hard left and talk about the NHL. And the Stanley Cup playoffs fast approaching. When the Chicago Blackhawks get there, they're not going to have their big horse on the back end for game one. As Duncan Keith suspended for 6 games, last 5 games of the regular season, 1 playoff game because he slammed his stick into Charlie Coyle's face. Sounds bad. Looked bad, too.
Yep.
It wasn't quite McSorley on Donald Brashear, but it wasn't great. And it's a guy who's kind of done a real similar thing in the past as well. So I guess a repeat offender. How do we feel, Gare, about 6 games and 1 postseason game?
That was pretty much what I expected. Mm-hmm. If it had been more than 1 game in the playoffs, if this had happened, in game 80 or 81 or 82, that it would be a really interesting call. The league discipline had the luxury of making it look really punitive when, you know what, Duncan Keith can use a blow at this point of the year. And, missing game one of the playoffs, he could still lead the NHL in playoff minutes played. so
even after just game two.
Yeah.
He might play 50 minutes in game two.
Absolutely. So, I think that it was also, if you look at what was done, you might think that it's light. If you're looking at the outcome of it, then I think that mitigates it, right? It wasn't a career threatening injury. It wasn't anything like that. Maybe that plays to it differently.
Well, I mean, it could have been if his stick hits him in the eye.
But it wasn't.
Right. No,
it's just outcome driven.
But true. There's two schools of thought. Do you look at the act or do you look at the result, the outcome? But the thing that's interesting to me about this conversation that's had is there's also two schools of thought in do you look at the entire scene of events and what happened to Keith beforehand, or do you just solely look at his action and in this case his retaliation? Like, if I'm thinking of how I was schooled as a youngster, do I listen to my mom who said, two wrongs don't make a right? Or do I listen to my dad who said, if someone starts a fight, you end it, right? Like there's two schools of thought. And I thought the NHL got this one right because they kind of found a place right in the middle that made sense, that was punitive enough, that had a playoff game in it, but wasn't so many that it was going to affect the outcome of a series. Because forget about one game. In the NHL, you can be down 3 games and come back and win a first-round series. It's different than, basketball, per se. So I did think that they got it right.
Yeah, if two wrongs, if we're talking two wrongs, that's Ben taking the Nationals the last 2 years and taking them again.
He's, I mean, that's
he's
a fair
hoping
comment.
It's going to make it right.
That's a fair comment in October, but not on April 2nd. Because, I could take the Colorado Rockies to win it all. I won't. All right. Before we move on to the Canadian teams and the sad sacks that they are. So we're down to the short strokes as far as the playoff races are concerned. West is pretty close to being done, as it's going to come down to the Wild and the Avalanche, and the Wild with a 5-point edge on Colorado. The Avs do have a game in hand, but that's a long way to come back. The East is more interesting. And it's likely that just one of these teams misses the playoffs, but Philly, Boston, Detroit's on the outside looking in. Maybe the Islanders can be caught. But that's a jumble, and it seems like one of those teams is going to be on the outside looking in. As it stands right now, it's Detroit with 89 points, but just 1 point back of Boston, who are third in the Atlantic Division. Philly, that other wildcard team, they're on 89 points, so tied with the Red Wings and holding on to that long, long playoff drought. It would be weird, Garrett, to see Detroit on the outside of the playoffs looking in. I'm not saying it's going to happen. There's still time, and it's hard to say that they're not one of the favorites, but I don't know. Is the East so jumbled this year? And I know Washington's won it far and away. It feels like they clinched that entire conference about 5 weeks ago. Is it a situation where anybody in the East can make it to an Eastern Conference final and then take their shot against the Capitals, or are you not buying quite what the Capitals have sold you this season?
You know what? I think that the Flyers are a team that no one wants to play in the first round. Yeah. Like, they are rolling. Like, a Flyers-Caps series, boy, I'd be worried if I was the Caps. That would be not an ideal matchup. You're catching.
Oh, you'd have to hide the sharp objects in Washington if they lost a first round series after this season.
It's happened before, when the Caps lost to Montreal that one season, that one President's Trophy season, like it was a far greater upset, I think, than the Flyers, going in against the Caps this year. So. As far as Detroit goes, you know what? These aren't your father's Detroit Red Wings, right? This isn't 97-98. Steve Yzerman's gone away. You know, we're seeing the last of Pavel Datsyuk. There's been real turnover there.
Mike Babcock enjoying this?
Mike Babcock might have seen it coming, right? In reality, I think that he did see this coming, and I think also in as far as Ken Holland goes, I think he probably knew that there was going to be a greater overhaul necessary, and as far as a playoff stretch like that, it's a bit of a story if you're a Detroit fan. I don't know that the greater hockey fan community at large really gets so wrapped up in that. I mean, the St. Louis Blues had that ridiculous run in the playoffs as well. And, no one mourned their passing.
I just got a text from Gare Joyce, who just texted me, Fleury out with a concussion, his second of the year. This is amazing. We're getting texts during the show. So Gare Joyce?
Yeah,
me?
You did, yeah.
Okay, that's not what it happened. John Grigg texted me.
Oh, there
okay.
You go.
See, that makes a little more sense. You were, I'm sure, confused when I said yes. That you texted me.
The power of my mind, yeah. Right? I've turned my phone off.
I mean, Siri hasn't gotten to that point yet. Yeah. Like, eventually it'll be able to read your mind. Marc-Andre Fleury out, and that's a team that's been absolutely on fuego recently, and somehow without Evgeny Malkin, is when they've kind of turned it on. If they're without their number one goalie here for an extended period of time, if you're talking about a second concussion, they very well might be. Does that change the perception of what the Pittsburgh Penguins are?
I think so. I mean, you're looking at a team who has won their last four, is 9-1 in their last 10. You can make an argument that, they're playing the best hockey outside of Washington in the NHL. So when you look at not even just the fact that he's out, but just the precarious situation of not knowing if and when he might be back hanging over them. I think that changes the landscape for sure.
In the role of Ken Dryden, Matt Murray, the top prospect in goaltending in the American Hockey League and anywhere else, it will be filling in for Fleury. So it would have been an interesting call in an expansion draft, Pittsburgh could protect one goaltender. I don't know that they would protect Fleury over Murray. So although it might look like a devastating loss, in a way it'll give the Penguins an opportunity to figure out exactly what they do have in Matt Murray. And listen, the way the way Fleury has played in some playoff series yes. over the years.
Although he made a pretty big one in a cup final against the Detroit Red Wings at the end of that game.
And since then, a couple other real horrific moments. I was in the arena for a couple of them.
We got to revisit. When was that series against the Flyers where it seemed like every game was 7-8?
2012.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was there for the games in Pittsburgh, and it was hard to watch. Like, just a player unravel. And take the team down with him. So Matt Murray, here's your opportunity. Mm. You know, run with it.
Well, it's going to be an interesting decision because Fleury is 31, which is not old for a goalie by any means, but not young. So really, I mean, I suppose they get to see what their future might be before their eyes and make a real decision. The other thing too is we were talking about concussions and Pittsburgh Penguins. There will be a lot of scrutiny on how his head is handled. So interesting storyline moving forward.
Yeah, it could be a Wally Pipp situation though as well if Murray plays well and Fleury returns for the postseason.
For sure.
I think there's a good shot it's going to be that way.
Yeah.
No matter how this unfolds, if Fleury's back and playing, if it came down to protecting one in an expansion draft, I'd be surprised if it was Fleury over and they put Murray out there exposed, in an expansion draft. I couldn't see them doing that.
So I'll let you know if John texted me any other breaking news out of the NHL. But as it stands right now, good on you, John Gregg, for sending me that text about Marc-Andre Fleury. Before we take the break, and then we'll come back to talk about the Raptors and the Final Four, which goes this weekend as well. We don't have a ton of time to get into this, and maybe it requires a little bit more time, but it was funny in preparing for the show before we went on the air. John, I kind of figured, because I'd heard it before, talking to, and maybe I'm just tainted from, I talked to people from Vancouver who obviously are going to envy the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I thought of the seven Canadian teams on the outside of the playoff picture looking in, that the Maple Leafs would, if not the most enviable position, one of the most enviable, but you disagreed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that if you're looking at what a team, what you would be wanting in a team going forward, you say, how many first line, first forward line, first 2D, goaltender, of those six pieces, how many of them are the quality to win a Stanley Cup? Who do we have on our roster that can do that? Do the Leafs have someone who's in that profile? If you're going to say William Nylander, that's a big projection. In Montreal, look, you've got Price, Subban, you've got Pacioretty, and Galchenyuk as an emerging player. Those are four really useful pieces that you could say, NHL teams have won Stanley Cups with players like that at the top of their, as in the top third of their lineup. In Edmonton, they have McDavid. They have other pieces. Connor Hall's a great player. Do the Leafs have that guy? I don't see it. I don't see it at all. I think Vancouver might be the worst off.
I think there's almost no question about that.
Oh yeah, those jeans are faded and worn.
They're not acid wash either.
No, you can toss them out into the recycling. So Vancouver, I think, might be the worst off. To say that the Leafs are in the best position, I don't see it.
Well, I think it depends how you frame the argument because, sure, there are more known quantities in Montreal, but do you have the resources, the ability with it being a cap league to go and get those other pieces to fill in the holes around that framework that you mentioned? And do you trust the guy on the bench running things? And I think in Toronto, who the coach is, what the leadership structure is, and you have, 12 picks plus the hope of, a big name free agent whose first and last name start with the same letter. That possibly could come in.
You don't work for the team. You can say Steven Stamkos. Well, you're not going to be fined for tampering.
I just don't want people obliterating my Twitter mentions with Stamkos thoughts. So I think yes, the roster as presently constituted is in much better situation in Montreal. But I think which GM or president sleeps better at night, I think it's the one in Toronto, to be honest, because they have some flexibility moving forward and some optimism, where I think Montreal, you have some real hard work on how you get from, you know, obviously, let's remember Carey Price is one of the best hockey players in the world. If he's healthy, this looks totally different. But still, how do you get over the hump? I think that's harder than kind of getting out of neutral. And when you look at Edmonton, you have some of those pieces, but a piece like Taylor Hall, you don't necessarily know that you want. So it's figuring out which ones.
I think you want Taylor Hall. I mean, he's a hell of a player, right? Like, if you don't want him, you'll find 29 takers. Like, he's a super talent. And I mean, the McDavid experiment, you know, the launch, the rollout was limited this year by injury. You know, listen, in the window that was open to him, like, he more than lived up to the hype, I thought. So that, you know, what a season would look like with those two guys, you know, whether they're playing together or they're separated and they're your first two lines, I don't see the Leafs having that, you know. And I mean, they're controllable players, right? You can talk about having cap room and all that, but it's also, you know, those guys are under control for the Oilers, right? You know,
it'd be nice to see like a victory every now and then.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, I know, I agree Taylor Hall is talented, but at some point, like, you know, talent can also get you fired. Like, he's 24. He's never had over 30 goals. So at some point, you kind of are what you are, and you're no longer a prospect. You just are a guy that everyone really liked. So I'm not all in on him in the way that you are. And listen, they may have another first-round pick to add to that conversation. But I think a clean slate sometimes is better than one that you're not really in love with.
Well, if you're thinking the die's cast with Taylor Hall, where's that leave Nazem Kadri?
Wow. Yeah, it's true.
He's a great Corsi player, though. He's been real nice possession player. Hey, he scored a hat trick the other day. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Raptors and their prospects headed into the playoffs, and especially if they're without Demare Carroll, who, depending on who you listen to, will or will not be back before the end of the regular season, and how does that affect his postseason availability. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Donovan Bennett and Gair Joyce at Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of Free Association, a Raptors and NBA podcast.
I don't know who Party Next Door is. Does that make me really not cool?
Yes. Anyways, shall we move
All right,
on?
Well, Party Next Door.
I'd say it's a movement. Can we move on to basketball?
It's a movement. We'll move on. I just want to say, sorry, Kyrie. Sorry that happened. Been there. Sucks. Welcome back to Free Association on Sportsnet 590 and Sportsnet.ca. I'm JD Bunkus, flanked by Donovan Bennett, who knows a lot more about Party Next Door than me. You also know more about college hoops than I do because you picked UNC to win. And I picked Virginia, and we all know how this story has played out.
Yeah, my sleeper team on Sportsnet.ca to go far with Syracuse, and the player I thought was going to have a big breakout tournament, although it's not really a breakout, he's good all year, is Buddy Hield. But, I mean, I just get lost.
This is Jamal Murray, and you listen to Free Association.
Very pleased to be joined by host of the Doug Gottlieb Show and CBS college basketball analyst. Did a terrific job during the tournament. Doug Gottlieb, thanks for joining us, Doug.
Look, I like Buddy Hield. He's a great kid, a great worker. He's going to be a great shooter at the next level as well. But I do think it's the classic trap of guy plays well a couple of times on TV in March and suddenly becomes a cult hero and he gets a little bit overdrafted.
Go to Sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on Free Association and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe. Seems like a pretty good year to be talking baseball. Baseball Central returns beginning Monday at 11 a.m. only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Annis alongside Gare Joyce and Donovan Bennett. Raptors rolling right along. Give them now 51 wins after their victory over the Memphis Grizzlies. Were a little banged up. And a fun, fun game, actually, all around for the Raptors. We understand that this season will be evaluated come the postseason. But we're all trying to project how this Raptors team will do when the postseason arrives. First of all, they're done before they even hit the floor if Kyle Lowry's not able to play. But he's looked better, even though he had the elbow drain the other day. We all understand that this team goes as Kyle Lowry goes. And he's been outstanding all season long and nursing that elbow injury that he suffered in London against the Magic. Demare Carroll maybe changes the fortunes of this team as well. The big free agent acquisition plan about 20 games this season. Had the knee surgery. It was kind of cloaked in secrecy when he would return. It looked like he was ramping things up, and then he disappeared for a while. Apparently, he was just going to see doctors. Now he's full bore, ready to try and get back to a game situation here during the regular season. One, is that necessary for this team to win a round, if not two? And two, is it seemingly possible? I mean, not being a doctor, unless you guys have some sort of medical degree I'm not aware of. So those are a couple of questions, Donovan. Take them however you'd like.
Okay. Is Kyle Lowry necessary to win? Yes.
Yes.
Am I a doctor? No.
No. Okay.
Do they need Demare Carroll to get out of the first round? No, I don't think so. And I think he will be back in some form or fashion. I don't think he'll be close to 100% just because he hasn't been playing basketball for the better part of the last month. But over the sample size of, 75 games, they've been the second best team in the East, fluctuated between the fourth and fifth best team in the league. And outside of 14 games, they haven't had their projected starting lineup together as a unit with Jonas Valanciunas at the five and Demare Carroll at the three. I don't think he's necessary for them to win around because he hasn't been an integral part of them winning so far this year. And to be quite honest, the level that Norman Powell is playing at right now supersedes the level that Demare Carroll played at best when he was playing. Like, we forget in the, just over 20 games that Demare Carroll played.
He wasn't a game changer.
He was hurt for many of those games. And some of them, he wasn't very good. In the opening game, he left with an elbow injury that he came back from. So literally out of the gate, he's been carrying injuries. A lot of his value is on the defensive end, comes with communication and being a help defender or helping the helper. And in a weird way, I think that is also hurt with him being around because he doesn't have a rapport with a lot of these guys that's been built over time. When Jonas leaves for 20 or so games and comes back, he has a sense of familiarity with Kyle and DeMar because they played together for years. They've trained together for years. DeMar is new to this entire equation. So I don't think good, bad, or indifferent, he's going to really impact things other than he gives them a bit more depth and help if they were to get an additional injury.
If he's 90%, if he's 100%, he can be in the rotation. He's not going to start. And, I think that he'd have to be in the rotation and be used a bit just to determine if he is healthy enough to contribute at all, So, I don't know that I don't think that he's necessary for this team to have success in the postseason. It would be a bonus if he were available and useful in any way.
Yeah, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah, and you know what? You mentioned the defensive end, and it's a smart mention, Ben, because I think matchup also dictates that a lot. And, right now, if the playoffs started today, they'd play Detroit. And I don't think Demare Carroll really factors in.
No. They just need to avoid Joe Johnson.
Well, exactly. He guards Tobias Harris, who's going to stand behind the three-point line and shoot threes. Okay, got it. If they happen to face Indiana and Paul George, or Chicago and Jimmy Butler, then I think DeMar Carroll has a lot more value in those situations. So it is interesting how the matchups may define what his role ends up being.
If he's anything less than 100%, though, you're going to be spotting him rather than leaning on him, I think.
All right, before we go, Final Four going Saturday night from Houston. And as much as this tournament, going into this tournament, the conversation was, oh, anybody can win. It's a total toss-up. You never know. There's no dominant team this season. Well, okay, you do have a 10 seed in Syracuse and a team that many believe shouldn't be in this tournament. But you got the three other teams, I think at some point this season, have all been ranked number one in the country, in Villanova, Oklahoma, and North Carolina. Is that good? Is it fun? And is there any team that really stands out? Now that we're down to the Final Four, is it clearly North Carolina, the superior team, or Nova's look pretty good? And you got Buddy Hield in Oklahoma as well.
I think it's Carolina's tournament to lose. Having said that, I think matchup-wise, their toughest matchup might be the team they're playing right now, which is a 10 seed, which is crazy to say, but they've got great length. Carolina doesn't shoot the three consistently. They're streaky from behind the arc, and that zone can mess with you. And there's familiarity because Syracuse plays them in conference. And a lot of the Syracuse kids were recruited alongside kids from UNC. They played on AAU teams together, so they're not going to fear them away a normal 10 seed would. The Boeheim Roy Williams matchup of who can win a title before, you know, wins get vacated, I find to be fascinating.
I think the team that's playing to its absolute highest level is Villanova, and mm-hmm. their wins, they've just shot the lights out, mm-hmm. and they have been super impressive. That said, Carolina just gets baskets from 3 feet and in, right? They just go right over you. I don't think Syracuse is gonna be able to stop that. Although, you know, that's how it turned. They turned around the Virginia game was defense. So I mean,
I figure if Carolina's up 20 with like, you know, a couple minutes to go, probably not blowing that lead.
That's dangerous territory. The interesting thing, I think, just in broad strokes, there are no one and done guys that we're talking about this point.
Great point.
You know, and you look at the highest profile player here, Hield, right? Mm-hmm. A wooden candidate. You know, like you've got senior contributors, right? And I think if you went back and looked at the eight, you know, the team that Syracuse beat, Virginia, they leaned on senior players, right? And so the big knock on the NC2A, the one and done, well, okay, you know, they're
Kentucky
out there.
Came pretty close last year, but yes.
Yes, you know.
Pretty darn close.
Yeah, but they last year they got exposed by, you know, Kaminsky and like a senior ridden, you know, a team that was leaning on seniors again, so.
But the funny thing is when you project to the NBA, when you look at the best teams, the Warriors, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, guys who stayed in school and were upperclassmen. The Spurs, Kawhi Leonard, Tim Duncan, guys who stayed in school when they could have left early. So there is a method to sticking around.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun to watch. This was a whole lot of fun. Thanks, gents. For Donovan Bennett, Garrett Joyce, I'm Ben Ennis. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.